Hello and welcome to Animation Education, a semi-weekly deep dive podcast on all things animation. My name is Andy. I will be your host for tonight. And with me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia.
Hello.
How are you doing, Nadia?
I am very good. Larry got his second COVID vaccine today, and we watched Eurovision last night. So it was a weekend of songs and shots.
Woo!
Woo! How are you, Andy?
That sounds great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I wish I could have spent my shot just watching Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
I get my shot next week.
Yay!
I spent my weekend dog sitting for a friend.
Ooh!
I just got to spend the entire weekend with a puppy.
That's amazing.
It was great. Everything was great.
What kind of good dog?
I want to say it's a Maltese mix.
Ooh, so he's a little fella?
He's a little fella. Oh, he's such a little fella.
Amazing. My dogs have been incredibly annoying this week because it's starting to get warm and Ramus has a lot of fur and really hates the heat, so he's just been very anxious. And then Sokka has gotten like spring fever, so he's just become 12 times more rambunctious than he normally is, which is already pretty rambunctious. So we're working on it.
I watched the finale for Amphibia and I cried.
Yes, amazing. I'm really excited. I got Larry super into Amphibia too, so we started watching it together.
Yes.
He absolutely loves it.
It everywhere.
Everybody.
It's great.
Everybody loves it in this house.
This is an Amphibia household.
Honestly though, it is. I am getting a Frog and Toad shirt because Frog and Toad is like one of my favorite things from my childhood. So I can now wear my Frog and Toad shirt while watching Amphibia and just have lots of frogs in my life. Because what else does a girl want, you know? Just love frogs.
What if I told you that they had confirmed a season two for, where was I going with this?
Owl House? Is it Owl House?
Owl House. It is Owl House. They have confirmed a seasons 2 and 3 for Owl House.
Oh my god, 2 and 3? Stop.
They've confirmed season 2. Season 3 is supposedly going to be, I believe it's a sequence of 3 films, if I remember correctly.
Whoa, that's interesting. I am super excited.
But they did release the intro
to the second season of Owl House. Oh, do I want to wait so that I can experience it with the show, or do I want to watch it now? I'm literally already pulling up YouTube, so I think I want to watch it now. But no, you know, I'm going to wait. Do you know what's been confirmed? Do you know when it's supposed to be releasing or beginning to release?
June 12th.
Oh my god, it's going to start right before my birthday. There are so many good things happening in June because we also have Luca, which I think comes out the 17th. We have Owl House, which starts on the 12th. So pretty much June is just going to be a hoppin' month. That's amazing. Those are also all like perfect summer feeling shows.
Yeah, season 3 is 3 44-minute specials.
Interesting. Has another show ever done that format before? Because I know like often shows will have films and stuff that are kind of offshoots, but I can't really think of a show that's done that format for an entire season.
Yeah, like planned out as that format?
Like
I don't
actual
believe it was initially planned out as that format.
Hmm.
I remember the creator of the show actively like being pretty vocal that 3 44-minute episodes was not what she was initially promised when she pitched the show.
Oh, that's sad. That makes me sad because it's so good. But hopefully they, I mean, it does give them the chance to do some interesting extended storyline. So you know what? I trust that they will make the best of it because I have been incredibly impressed with them as creative,
people.
I am very mad that they weren't able to do what they wanted because obviously they know what they're fucking doing. But it's fine. Whatever.
But I think that is an issue with, like, just the way that we make these shows in general. Like, and this is going to be a good transition into our actual topic today, but I do think that, and I hate to say Amazon is doing something right. I really do. But I think the way that Amazon treats its original content is actually correct.
meaning like actually trusting the creators and giving them space to develop shows the way that they want.
Allowing the creators of their shows to properly tell the stories in the amount of time that they need their stories to be told. Not restricting those stories to whatever the 22-minute format is in general, and not restricting those stories to whatever the 22-episode or 16-episode or whatever limit episode seasons that they are required.
That is very fair. And an excellent transition into today's topic, an Amazon original, Invincible.
Our topic for this episode, we're going to be discussing Invincible. It is an adaptation of the 2003 comic series of the same name, created by Robert Kirkman. This show is fairly difficult to discuss without spoiling some fairly heavy aspects of the show. So instead of doing our usual non-spoiler section, spoiler section, I'm going to give a warning now. We cannot discuss the show without giving some amount of light spoilers for the show. So if you want to go into this show, it is available on Amazon Prime, and it is absolutely worth the watch.
I completely agree, and you can trust me 100% because I went into it thinking that I would hate it and really dreading watching it, and I devoured it like a maniac and am incredibly excited for the next season. So go watch it, please. Also, it is like definitely good to experience without getting the spoilers. I think that really carried me through the show, is like this element of mystery and suspense and anticipation. So if you would like to have that, definitely watch it first.
I do want to say one thing while we have all of you who have not seen the show yet or who care about spoilers here. The first episode does play out like a fairly generic Justice League ripoff. It's not that, and don't watch this with your kids.
Yeah.
Oh, please, no.
Oh, God. It is incredibly violent. It is so violent, but I still loved it. So it's also got a lot of other good stuff in there, too. Real good stuff.
Anyway, with that out of the way, would you like to give a quick plot summary?
Oh, God. Okay. So the Invincible follows Mark, who is a teenager whose father is the superhero Omni-Man, who is sort of the big superhero leader of their world. And
he's Superman. He's rip-off Superman.
Yes. And the show begins with Mark getting his powers for the first time and follows him through his journey of becoming a superhero and also unpacking why his father, who is a Viltrumite, why he has come to Earth, and what he intends to do there. I feel like that's kind of all I can say without spoiling stuff, but it's...
No, that was a great job. You did great.
Yay.
Good job. Head pats.
Woo.
But yeah, this is a show that I had been following the creation of from pretty much stage one. I had personally read a good portion of the comics going in, so I was pretty actively familiar with the plot beats and what would be occurring over the course of the show itself. I think that the show does a great job of putting all those storylines in a very cohesive way and editing them in a way that very much adheres to the 44-minute TV show runtime that they are given. I genuinely love what they've done with this. I think the writing is amazing. I think that the animation is very reminiscent of this, like, Dragon Ball Z-esque era, which is very nostalgic for me. But it's very clearly, like, we saved money by having most of our show be still characters talking in a room. And then you get a burst of action, and that's where, like, clearly they put the money into. And then we go back to still characters with CGI backgrounds. And it's not to the detriment of the show, but it's definitely noticeable if that is something that is important to you.
I didn't really notice it, so I did notice. I did notice the action.
Give it a rewatch. It definitely. I know you're not going to rewatch this anytime soon, but if you do give it a rewatch, it can get a little comical at times, just how bad some of the backgrounds are.
I feel like because this is a genre of show and just focus of show that I don't typically watch, I was so excited and enthralled by everything that was happening. And I also, like, it felt so fresh and new to me because I don't often watch superhero shows. And I also don't often watch, like, super intense, action-y, violent shows. So I was just so excited by all the new stuff I was consuming that I didn't even pay attention to the animation. But I do remember I think it's the first episode, when Mark is fighting for one of the first times, and he's, like, moving really, really fast. And you can see the background, like, blurred as he is going through the sequence of, like, fighting this thing. I think that was Mark, right? I don't know. But basically, I would...
A scene where someone was moving very, very fast. That could be anyone.
That's true. This is a superhero show. But basically, it was, like, I think it was an action scene in the first episode. And I got so hyped up about it. Like,
if it was the first episode, it wasn't Mark.
Oh, that's true.
Mark doesn't get his powers until, like, what, the end of that episode?
Well, it was in the beginning.
Was it?
I don't...
There is literally a character whose ability is that he moves very, very fast.
I don't think it was him, because with him, you usually... I don't know. Anyway, there was a super awesome action scene, and I got, like, incredibly hyped about it, and I got really into it, and then I felt weird that I was so into it, because I usually actively avoid action-y violent stuff, but I was, like, getting hyped, and it felt weird, but it felt super thrilling. It was like going to a theme park, but I got to stay at home.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you familiar with the term sakuga?
Nope.
So sakuga is a term that is used generally in anime to refer to a scene in a show where the animators very clearly went all in on.
Oh, okay.
It's this like hyper stylized, super well detailed animation style that's generally found in a lot of fight scenes in anime. You can see it a lot in One Punch Man. You can see it in some, I think a very good example that we've discussed recently, what I would consider sakuga, is the dance scene in Owl House.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's like that kind of thing where it's like, clearly we brought in someone, we made this super stylized, and it's a much better quality animation than what you would generally see in the show that you are given.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Invincible does this pretty frequently, where you consistently have these sort of still well-drawn images, but they're never really moving, they're not super dynamic. And then when you get to these very important fight scenes, they really put a lot of detail into those.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because the world they're in is extremely realistic. It is a superhero show, but it's not a satire of superheroes. It's not a commentary on superheroes. It is a superhero show from start to finish. But it very much ignores the rules that you get in your generic superhero shows or in your generic superhero movies, where, like, if Superman bashes into a building, that building is conveniently evacuated, or no one really gets hurt. And these kinds of rules don't really apply to this world, which I think lends it to be a very good show to be able to have some very important conversations about just how the politics of both this world and our world really work.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring this back to the art, I think its use of sakuga does a very good job of highlighting when those times are, when we're really emphasizing this is real, this is what is happening, and not just some superhero show.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway, what were your general impressions of the show?
I didn't know anything about it. I obviously didn't read the comics and didn't know it existed until you said that we were going to record on it. So I promptly watched the trailer and was like, oh man, Andy, oh god, I'm gonna hate this show. There's so much blood. So many superheroes. Why? Why, dear God? So I, like, prepped myself to, like, motivate myself to get through it. I put all these things into place. I was like, I know I'm recording with Andy. I made sure that I was watching it with Larry because I know that he's super into superheroes and really likes the type of show. And when I showed him the trailer, he was like, oh yeah, I wanted to see this. So he knew about it. And I was like, all right, like, I've got all this time. It's only 8 episodes. We'll watch one every night. It'll be okay. And then I saw the first one and I was super into it. I was like ready to go. I was super excited to watch the second one. I didn't feel like I needed to take huge breaks in between watching the episodes like I did with BoJack. I watched like multiple in a row. We like binged them before bed. And I was talking to my parents about it, and my dad couldn't get through the first episode because there's this big thing that happens at the end, which is really intense. And I was like, no, it's really good. So we'll see if they watch it. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. I think that the writing was incredible. Typically I watch a lot of happy shows, but I also watch a lot of shows where you know who the characters are and they grow as you watch the show, which is fantastic and what I really like. But this show was really different in that, like, there was all this stuff that was withheld about the characters themselves. So as you're watching, with Mark as the exception, because you kind of see him from start to finish, but all the other characters are, you don't know who they are. And the show, like, piecemeal gives you these snippets of their lives that makes you question who they are, what their intentions are, where they fall on the scale of morality. And it was just like such a fascinating character mystery to get through. I just wanted to be able to put all the pieces together and understand the characters and understand their role and like get to the bottom of what was happening in this world with these people. And it like completely propelled me through the entire thing. I really, really loved it. And I'm super excited for the second season. Also, can we just talk about how great the little intro is? Because they have this like, they don't have like a song or anything. They like flash, they flash invincible like across the screen with.
No, it's not that they don't have a song. They interrupt the characters as they're talking.
I love it because it happens for the first time that any character says the word invincible. It cuts them off and it like shows invincible really big on screen. And I love it because it happens at a different point throughout the show. So it's not like 5 minutes in you see the intro or like you see the intro and then the episode. Like sometimes it's in the beginning after a couple minutes. Sometimes it's like halfway through the frickin' show. And it is so good. And I found myself like anticipating when it would happen or like trying to be like, oh, this is it. Like this is the line. And with each...
This is it. Yeah. This is gonna be it.
And with each episode, the like screen gets bloodier and bloodier and bloodier, which was just like again, right? Like the impact of actions and like really understanding the violence, for lack of a better word, of the show. Like it's right there in front of you in the intro scene, and it stacks. Right? It's not just like here's this world that's been wiped clean. Here's this. It's a world that is moving through with impact that layers. So the blood doesn't go away. It just gets added to. So anyway, it was super good and I loved it so much.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This is definitely a show that clearly has a history in it. You learn about all of the characters as they go through their lives, but you also get a sense that they had a life before this. You get a sense that there was a history behind this, that they live outside of just the story that we're seeing them in.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, so good. It's like, and I really do like character-driven shows, so I think in terms of having a show that is really focused on the characters, it's like, okay, there is this action and there is this violence, but it is very much rooted in the characters and what it means to them. And so I think it gave me, as somebody who usually really hates violence and also did for sure have to like look away for some of the scenes because it gets really graphic, like it gave me a reason why that violence was there. And I didn't feel like it was just there to be like, you know, violence porn or there to like cause an impact. It was there for a very specific reason. And that reason was thematic and that reason was impactful. And so it made me feel better watching it because it wasn't there for the sake of being violent or like the sake of being grotesque. It mattered a lot. And also it had an emotional impact. So like I have a hard time with shows that are super violent where like nobody is like talking about how they're super violent. It's just like okay. And in this show it's violent, but it's not okay. You're not supposed to feel good about the violence. It's supposed to be horrific. And the characters respond to it as something that's horrific.
Yes, absolutely. I recommend this to you. And I did give you the warning that there was a good amount of gore.
Yeah, I did
but
appreciate
it. I always try to give that asterisk of like, it is there. It's not gore for gore's sake. I've said that on so many times when recommending this show. Like, here is a warning. It is there for a reason. It's not like some other shows that I'm not going to name that just throw gore at you to just give you that, like, shock factor and keep you invested. This is very clearly, we understand what you're here for. We're going to give you good character development. And this horrifying, terrible image that we're going to imprint in your mind, we are doing so for a reason.
Yeah, so good. I like absolutely, I can't. I think that also because I was expecting to not like it, going into it liking it so much is just such a thrill and it's so exciting. And again, like it really gave me something that I don't typically get when I watch TV, which like so good. And I think also having it be 8 episodes is like a good, it was a good length for me. And I think also the show did a really good job of fitting things into this time frame without feeling rushed, but also with leaving this really exciting mystery and intrigue for the next season. It is intense and I did love it and I did binge it, but I definitely think that if the first season were longer than it was, I would have had a harder time getting through it. So having it be this condensed, like, it really kept the excitement and the thrill and the energy moving forward at this really consistent pace throughout.
Absolutely.
And it also didn't, like, overwhelm me by, again, the violence, which I think was done incredibly well, but also is still a lot regardless. So, like, it was just, like, the perfect... And like you were talking about at the beginning of Amazon giving the shows the time that they need, this show took the time it needed, and I am glad that it was short. Because I think it works really well with this. Well, that's not to say, like, but because, like, I know there are going to be more seasons, but having that space in between the seasons, and I don't know if the second season is going to pick up right where I left off, or it's going to be, you know, some time in the future, but having the cutoff between seasons fall where it fell just felt really, really natural.
Yes, and as you said, the pacing of the show is very good. The 44-minute episode, the 40 to 50-minute episode lengths are quite well done and well paced, and it gives you it is fairly intense, but it does give you this breathing room. While at the same time, there are definitely aspects of the show that are very happy.
Yeah.
There you get episodes where it's like, this is just a comic book. The hero does actually save the day. You get an entire episode where a villain is just this mad evil villain, and Mark goes in and just does his job. No one gets hurt, and it's all very comic booky. Like, you do get these spanses of, we're going to be very optimistic about this world, we're going to be very happy about this world. And when things do get hyper violent, it's not reacted to as normal.
Yeah.
And I think that it does a very good job of balancing the violence with just, like, campiness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good, guys. Real good.
It's real good. It's real good. It's so good. Nadia, is this a show that you would recommend, and why?
Yeah, 100%. It definitely is. I think it is a show I would recommend to anybody who typically does enjoy superhero films and movies and shows. You know, it's just a really well-written slice of that genre, so if that's already something that you like, I would recommend it. If you're on the fence about it, like me, I would still recommend it to you if you really like the aspects of a show that is super character-driven and a show that leads you through it with this mystery and intrigue and allows you to really think and grapple with, like, the ambiguity of morality. Kind of. I mean, we've talked a lot about the violence up until now. If that is a deal breaker for you, this is definitely a really violent show. So if you do, like, and I also have a genuinely hard time with that, and I still really liked it, but I know some folks might have a different, like, level of sensitivity with that kind of stuff. It is super gory, but it does typically happen at really isolated moments, so it's also easy to kind of, like, look away or not pay attention to those specific scenes. So if you really don't think you can handle the violence, definitely I don't think this is a show for you. But if you're, like, okay with it, or if you think you could stretch because of the character stuff like I did, definitely okay with it, but also not for kids. Definitely not. Like, this isn't a kid superhero show. This is... for sure, for mature audiences.
Yes, for big boys, big girls.
Yeah, it's for the big folks who are ready to handle the incredible emotional distress that it is going to talk about.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all of that. This is definitely a show I would recommend to anyone who is looking for a good, serious story. This is honestly a good direction for adult animation where it's not just another Family Guy. It's taking animation and it's giving it a very serious and well put together story that come 10, 15 years ago, you would see people trying to put this in live action.
Oh, and I'm so glad it's not live action. Like, I...
What if I told you that there was a live action one in the works?
I would probably not be able to watch it. I don't know. Why? Why does everyone have to do live action after something that's been animated has come out? Like, the animated version is good. I also think that there are things that animation can do that live action can't. Like, regardless of the amount of CGI that you can throw into a film, like, this...
independent from this, there is currently a live action production helmed by Seth Rogen. So this was not off the success of the TV show. This was literally just independently.
Doesn't he voice something in the Amazon Prime?
I believe he got the job because of his work on the movie.
Okay.
Right?
That's actually pretty
He's cute. Just like, I really like this comic book. And they're just like, yeah. Or at least I wouldn't be surprised if he had gotten his job on the Amazon original because of his work because of his pushing for the film.
I'm not saying that, you know, hypothetically, an Invincible movie I might not be able to handle. We shall see. However, this specific show, I am very grateful that it was animated, and I would not have been able to get through it if it hadn't been. So, yay, animation!
Yeah!
You got me to watch something way out of my comfort zone.
You liked it. I did it good.
I really, really did. I also like that I liked it. It's very exciting to, like, see your taste growing, and I think that's what, like, that's why it's so exciting to have someone like you who can recommend stuff to me, who knows what my tastes are, and can push me out of my comfort zone with intention. Because, like, if I had just tried to watch a bunch of crappy superhero things, I would have just, like, gotten fed up and hated it and been like, I'm not going to try it again. But because it was a specific thing that had stuff that I liked,
but there's also a lot of trash in the superhero genre. Like, there's a lot of trash. Yeah, there's definitely some bad places to start.
Yeah. Okay, have you ever seen Justice League Action?
Nope.
Okay, because that's, like, a superhero show, but more one geared towards kids. And I watched it all with Larry, and
I believe you've recommended this to me before.
Yeah. I don't think it got renewed for another season, so it kind of ends abruptly, and it makes me really sad, because I really loved it, but I found it hysterical and really sweet, and I liked it a lot. So if you're done with the gore of Invincible and you're like, I want superheroes but a little bit more wholesome, give it a go.
Anyway, where was I? I would definitely recommend this show. If you are in any way adverse to gore, if the sight of blood makes you faint, if you don't like the idea of viscera on your TV screen, I understand that, and I would consider skipping this one. As much as I want to recommend it, don't do things that make you feel uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But also, I hate gore, and I was able to get through it. Not saying that everyone who is can, but also if it is something you can get past because of the other aspects of the show, or if it's something you can get past because of the intention of its inclusion, then I think it's still okay. Yes. If it's just, like, physical, visceral reactions, then yeah, this is gonna make you feel incredibly uncomfortable, and don't do that to yourself.
Yeah,
there are other shows you can watch that will not make you feel bad, so don't
yeah,
just don't
as
do
I
it to yourself.
As I said earlier, there is gore. It is not gore for gore's sake. When they use the gore, it is used in a very purposeful manner. As Nadia said earlier, it is very isolated to very specific scenes, and it is those scenes that are meant to emphasize just how real this world is. Outside of that warning that I would give for this show, yes, absolutely watch it. Do not watch it with your kids. This is definitely not a kid show.
No.
I think I would have had nightmares if I had watched this.
The episode will definitely tell you that. It will be like, hey, there's all this stuff.
Oh, speaking of warnings before episodes, can I just say that the Amphibio season finale had a warning before it?
Oh my god.
Yeah. It opened with a warning. I was like, oh, okay. I see where we're going here.
My goodness.
Moving forward, we will be discussing this show with no restraint on spoilers. If you have not seen the show, it is available on Amazon Prime. Watch it, come back. It's real good. I want to start this off by just talking about that one bodyguard at the beginning of the first episode.
Okay, I literally have a note in my phone about him, and I, like, picked up my phone to look through my notes before this episode, and I read that note, and I was like, oh, he just, like, really doesn't come back.
No!
Like, that's just not, that is, I really expected that to be, like,
but, like, it's so heartfelt.
That was drawn.
It's, like, the first 5 minutes of the episode, he's just, like, giving you this, like, speech, and, like, it almost made me cry. It was just like, wow. You really,
oh
you
God,
are a human
Andy.
Being, you really know what, like, the human experience is, and you're, like, you're really going through something right now.
Oh my god, Andy, the show is a dad sandwich, and the first slice of bread is a good boy dad, and the last slice of bread is, like, the worst dad ever.
Dad sandwich.
Dad
sandwich
dad.
Me daddy.
Watch Invincible if you like daddy sandwiches. No, but for, but, yeah. Okay, I also remember seeing that scene and being like, so excited. This is so sweet. And also being like, I remember Andy saying the show is violent. I am so scared that he's just going to get, like, brutally killed in the first
episode. Yeah, and then there's a supervillain attack, and it's not like that's going to...
Yeah, I was so scared. Luckily, he's okay.
Yeah, you get to see him on his trip to London.
Yeah. Oh.
They almost die again, and his son's like, oh, I love you, Dad. And he's like, you called me Dad.
Yeah, that part also, I was like, oh, they came back.
Well, you get the full arc. Like, I don't need any more. You got the full arc.
That's true, but I just thought it was like, I mean, I guess it makes sense as an opening because it's really establishing the fact that, like, this is a show about a relationship between a father and a son, and, like, hey, guess what? Here's this juxtaposition of a healthy relationship so that you can really understand how unhealthy everything else that happens in, because we've so gracefully shown you what a good dad does. So guess what? Now you can literally compare everything that happens between Mark and Nolan to this beautiful father-son and just feel worse about all of it.
Yeah, and I think that does a lot to build the tone of the show. Because, like, first episode does very much feel like, as I said before, this sort of pseudo Justice League with your actual literal faux Justice League characters doing, yeah, like, generic superhero things.
Oh, I love it.
And that first scene does a very good job of establishing these are real people. They have real flaws and they deal with things the same way we do. They're not generic NPCs. They're not just faceless characters that either get saved or just get slaughtered. They have lives outside of this. And it really establishes that this is a very realistic world.
Yeah, for sure. The first episode also is just, like, beautiful, and it's it just does such a good job of setting up your expectations to then subvert them at the very end, which is just, I just absolutely love it, because you have, again, like, you have the father and son, and then you have this generic villain fight where, like, people almost don't get saved, but then do get saved, and like, heroes almost die, but then are saved by other heroes, and it sort of sets up this, at least a semblance of safety within these fights. Some level of trust that characters are going to be okay.
Yeah, it very much lulls you into this false sense of security. It gives you an idea.
The end of the episode is like, lol, Trisha, gonna just murder everyone right in front of you for like 3 solid minutes. No worries.
So for those who are still here and for some reason have not watched the show, the first episode ends with Nolan Grayson, Mark's father, and Omni-Man just come in, just call in all of the Guardians, quote-unquote Guardians of the Globe, the pseudo-Justice League, into their headquarters, and then he brutally murders them.
Yeah, and you just don't know why. And, yep. At least, I mean, I guess unless you've read the comics. But, like me, if you haven't, you just are like, what?
And, I mean, that fight scene is absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
It is definitely, I think, the second most intense and brutal scene in the show itself.
Yeah, which I think is, again, super intentional. Because even in this world where there are these huge impacts of violence and huge impacts of disaster, and you are already set up to feel incredibly emotional about the people that don't get saved and the situations that put them in danger and the weight of being a hero, the real brutality always comes from Omni-Man. The two worst scenes we get are because of Omni-Man, and I think that's incredibly intentional. Like, there is this world that is imperfect and in many ways bad, and there is badness within this world and violence within this world, but it is Omni-Man who brings this next level of brutality, and his brutality is distinctly different than the brutality we've seen in the rest of the world.
Yeah, and it's that mystery of why Omni-Man did what he did is a very big driving factor for the next few episodes. And there are multiple points where they do hint at it. There's a good number of foreshadowing. And it's just like lines that you blink and you will miss them.
I feel like I figured it out pretty early on. And Larry pretty much nailed it after the big fight. He was like, oh, okay. And I was like, what? But yeah, there are like a couple of lines that really stick out that I remember hearing and being like, oh, all right. That's, yep. They're hinting at it. But yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that. Ah.
But yeah, and this show does a lot for the world building. And I think that the first episode alone does quite a bit to establish that this is a world with superheroes. This is a world where someone can just randomly explode things and someone is just a robot. And that's just normal. Like the way Debbie talks about Omni-Man's adventures, like it's just another thing. And the way that they treat their ability to fly, like this is, oh, I'm just picking up groceries in Italy. Don't worry about me.
I wish.
And I think one of the earliest scenes that really caught me in terms of the character development and in terms of the relationships between the characters was when Mark was trying to practice his landings in like the middle of the night, and Debbie comes out and is like, hey, what are you doing? Go to sleep. And then they have this really heartfelt moment where she's like, yeah, you've always been my baby boy, and it's always just been you and me while with your world-saving father, but now it's you and him and your ordinary mother. And like, you really get to see where Debbie is like really the source of Mark's humanity.
Yeah.
Whereas Nolan is very clearly shown to be somewhat human, he's putting up a facade. And it hasn't quite sunk in that he should or is acting in any way human. Like, Debbie is where Mark gets most of his humanity.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's an aspect that isn't really touched on in the comics nearly as much as it is in this show.
I was really excited with Debbie as a character. Like, in the first couple of episodes, I had a little bit of a tough time with Mark, and I mean, obviously you're not supposed to be like, yay, Omni-Man, but,
Are you sure?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd be a little bit concerned if someone was like, hey, did you see Invincible? I really loved Omni-Man. I'd be like, that's like 500 red flags.
To be fair, if we had removed that last scene from episode 1, Omni-Man would come off as a pretty good and caring father.
No, I don't think so. I really had a hard time with the way that he talked to Mark. I mean, I mean, it's hard to remove the context of what you know. But like, there are some specific scenes where he's talking to Mark and he says something, and I was just like, what a fucking asshole. And I think it's probably about control, right? With Nolan, his interactions with Mark are much more about controlling what Mark does, about establishing absolutely what Mark has to do. And with Debbie, they're much more about like giving Mark another context to understand what his options are.
But I do think if you were to remove the final scene from episode 1, Nolan's relationship with Mark would feel much more like a father trying to instill values into a son, but not really knowing the best way to go about it. You know, like you see this in a lot of like generic family themed TVs and movies where it's like, oh, I can't connect to my children.
I mean, yeah, but I still don't think I'd like him. And I think it's probably
because
I'm just like, I mean,
I mean, you watched him like brutally murder several people. It's not easy to erase from your mind.
Freaking done with the whole, because he is a traditional father figure, right? In the sense of like, he represents this traditional masculinity, these traditional values of raising a kid and having a family and...
Oh, and he definitely embodies a lot of toxic masculinity, especially with his own backstory.
Done with that, but I don't think you need the first scene to get his toxic masculinity, because I think...
No, that's absolutely fair.
He talks to Mark, and I'm just... Maybe it's because I'm just freaking done with white men, but, like, I stand by the fact that even without the context of that first episode and him just killing everyone, I would not have liked him.
I don't disagree with you. I don't think I would like him either, but I do think that without the context of that first episode, I do think that there would be an argument for someone to be like, yeah, he's just a mismeaning father. Like, I totally get it. Like, I understand why someone would defend his actions outside of the murder of several individuals.
Okay, yeah.
I have to emphasize, murder is not okay.
Yes. That's...
But I think where I only say that up to a point, and I think that there's a very interesting conversation, and this is a parallel that I had in real time as I was watching the show, and we were living in the world that we're living in now, when Mark is having a conversation with his father about Titan, and Titan had sat Mark down and was like, look, you don't know what it is to really be a hero. You have this big picture thing in mind, but you're not really looking at what's occurring on the lower levels. And there is still this structural racism that exists. There is still an underworld of not necessarily like evil supervillains, but just individuals who have gotten to where they are by just being evil.
At the expense of others.
At the expense of others. And it would take advantage of others to get to where they are. And Mark decides that he's going to help them. He's going to defeat this overlord machine head who's really just a businessman, but is using his connections and his drug deals to manipulate the area around him to fit his needs. And I think it's very interesting that, like, you still have this structural racism in a world where powers exist. Like, Titan is still suffering from poverty. Titan is still suffering from discrimination, especially amongst the individuals who just see him as this brute force. And he can't really get out of it. There's no system in place for him to do so. And when Mark has this conversation with his father gives him this sort of look at the big picture. We don't need to worry about this small stuff. And I think that the arguments that he used, and I had this realization as I was watching the episode, that like the arguments that Nolan is using right now are the same arguments that we in real life used in the middle of this pandemic to justify opening up in the middle of some of the highest COVID numbers we had seen.
Holy crap. Wow.
And I was like, look, I understand you're doing your best to put your best foot forward and give an argument that you feel is best. But like, if you really take a look at what the actual intentions of those individuals are, Nolan, not the, we're not getting political. I'm not trying to say that individuals who wanted to open up businesses way too early were trying to actively conquer the world. That's not. No, not trying to get in any way political. I'm just saying.
Just building the connection.
Yeah, there. Just building. Like, Nolan had, like, his intentions were to conquer the world. His intentions were to weaken and conquer the world.
Yeah.
To do so, he had to not care about these small things.
Yeah, it also actively benefited him for the people that he didn't care about to essentially get rid of themselves so that he could take care of.
Wait, are we still talking about Invincible or the pandemic?
Oh, you know, just both.
Yeah. Just Invincible, though. Definitely just, yeah, no parallel to.
Oh,
yep,
yeah. No. It definitely does not benefit the world to keep people in poverty. But yeah, wow, that's a really powerful connection. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. No, I did that in real time. I was like, this is.
Oh, wait,
and like, this is a story that came out in 2000. Like, this story is not necessarily new. This had been around for years. Mm-hmm. But it's so relevant to what's happening right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it just goes back to this world where we are forced to talk about power and about intention and about all the things that we kind of have to talk about now. Too, right? Like, I, not only is this world real in its consequences, it's real in its struggles and its people. You wanna take a pause from the heavy stuff to maybe chat about some of the real teen issues that this show deals with via relationship?
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah, let's do it. Let's get all into that.
Okay, so in the last episode, Mark and Amber get back together, and I'm very curious to hear what you think about that, because I didn't like it.
Why didn't you like it?
I didn't like it because of the reasons that Amber gave. She came back, and again, I also just, like, really hate it when people break up for, like, totally legitimate reasons, and then are like, oh no, look, they're so hurt, this big thing happened to them, and, like, come back. But it's like, no, the previous issue still existed. And I also just like the whole thing of like, cause she like, he was like, does this mean we're back together? And she was like, I didn't realize you'd been lied to too. And I was like, great. That doesn't, just because Mark had been lied to doesn't like negate the lying that he did to you. And just because he was manipulated doesn't mean that he didn't treat you badly. Like, these are totally separate things in my mind. And just because this huge tragedy happened to him and like all this crap, it doesn't mean that they should be together. And I also don't think it doesn't mean that they shouldn't have a relationship, right? Like, the impact of Amber seeing Mark in this danger, I'm sure elicited a lot of feelings that she probably still had for him in terms of the care and the compassion, but like, it doesn't have to be romantic. And it's already been established that, like,
to be fair in Amber's defense, that is the exact kind of logic that a high schooler would use.
Okay, that's true, but I think the issue is that they often don't feel like high schoolers. Like, Amber feels coded way older than she is. Eve feels coded older than she is. I think it's, oh, okay, this is interesting. I think it's the men that are coded as more high schoolers, and the women feel more mature, which is frustrating.
I mean, this is coming off the back of them all going to a college campus to shadow a freshman. Like, we are constantly reminded of their age in the show.
Yeah, but I feel like it's in action and not in conversation and, like, affect. I feel like Mark, I don't know.
I think the only reason that I think Mark feels coded a bit older is specifically because of his going out and his acting as a superhero. He kind of has to grow up a bit faster.
I feel like Mark is coded younger because he's grappling with all of these things of like, what do I want to do? Who do I want to be? Who do I want to be like apart from my family? And I feel like those are all very much things that high schoolers grapple with.
Eve is struggling with those same things. Like, she runs away from home. She has this argument with her parents.
That's true.
Like, Amber, not so much, but we don't really get much from Amber outside of Mark is a person of interest to her, and Mark is somewhat neglecting her.
Yeah.
Like, I think it feels like she's coded a bit older because her ability to distinguish that Mark is not necessarily being a good boyfriend despite having perfectly good reasons to not be in her life at the times that he's not in her life. Like, being able to separate out, you are still lying to me, you are still being dishonest to me, despite the fact that this dishonesty and this lying was with good intentions in mind.
Yeah.
Like, that's absolutely a very mature thought process to go through, and her breakup with Mark was very reasonable.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, like, that is a very mature and adult thing to come to terms with, and it's not necessarily something that you would expect a high schooler to be able to.
Well, that's true. I'm just, like, annoyed at the whole thing of, like, we break up, and then they get hurt, and then we get back together because, oh no.
So here's an interesting thing for me. Amber, I think, from the beginning, was a very interesting romantic subplot. In that, so Amber in the comics is a generic blonde white girl.
Oh, yay! They made a good change!
So they made a very good change in making her not that. And I think there are a number of characters that are changed specifically to be representative. And as much as I definitely agree with the reasons as to why they broke up initially, one of my biggest issues with making that change is, why make that change on a character who's just going to get broken up with in a few episodes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I definitely take issue with having the African-American character just be this token of affection only to then get be discarded within a few episodes.
Yeah, but I feel like they could have brought her back to be, like, a support, like a friend, right? But I also get sort of the, they're in high school, you're right, they make stupid decisions.
Like, I don't disagree with you. Them getting back together is definitely a very bad idea, because they never really resolve any of the actual issues that broke them up in the first place.
Yeah, also things are literally going to get worse. Like, now they're in a situation where the things that Mark has to do are more impactful. Like, I don't know, but I mean, yeah, they're in high school. And it makes sense for Mark to now be surrounded by people who are going to remind him of his humanity. And he already had that in his mom. And he already had that in Amber, too. Like, she sort of unknowingly was part of the reason why he wanted to take down Machine Face, because he understood the importance of the neighborhood to Amber. And that helped him understand the importance of the neighborhood.
And Amber had a specific direct connection to Titan's daughter.
Exactly. So, like, that makes sense. And you also have that with Eve, who is trying to find a way to be a type of hero who is doing good the way that she wants to do good. And I'm also now realizing, and I don't know if I like this or not, but it's, like, Mark is surrounded by women who are teaching him humanity. And I think, like, initially I get frustrated by that, because that is so often the role of female characters, is to just be this side that teaches the man something.
But I think, like you also get a bit of that from Will as well.
Exactly, you do get that from Will too, but like the majority of them are women.
Yes.
And like but I also think that they are good fleshed out characters, and I think that they are going to have impact. And I also think that seeing a show where the importance of these things that are often coded feminine, right? The importance of caring, the importance of thinking about others, the importance of being emotionally invested, the importance of feeling connected, like where those things matter so deeply. That's also good.
It's honestly beautiful that this is a show that emphasizes and revolves around being vulnerable. Yeah. And how being vulnerable is extremely important and extremely beneficial to you as an individual, all while having a main character named Invincible.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, there's so much emphasis on being open with yourself and others, and being a caring person, and being vulnerable. Being able to ask for help when you need it, and being able to care for others and show that your care for others is what makes you strong. And yeah, you have a character whose literal name is Invincible.
That's true, but we also know that he's not.
But that's what makes him invincible, is the fact that he's not.
Wait. That doesn't make any sense.
And don't worry about it.
No, Andy, I was going to be like, oh, like, wow, what? No, that's dumb. That is just nothing. That is no. But I, just talking about all these little side characters, I really, really liked, I don't know if Will is gay in the comics or not. We very rarely see straight male characters who have, like, intimate platonic relationships with gay men. And, like, to see them have a really deep friendship and to care about each other, and also for, like, Mark to say I love you really openly and like speak to him in this caring way mattered a lot to me, and I just appreciated seeing that on screen.
Yeah, no, it's great. It is absolutely great. And I do love that it's a character who is gay, but it's not, we don't get an episode on it. He's just gay, and yeah, that's it.
Yep, exactly. The character I do want to see more from is Eve, because I love her and I think that her powers are incredible. And it's like this, I don't know if, I mean, just kind of like this like running joke in the show that like people dismiss her. Like you get that with her parents, and then you get it at the very end when she like finally reveals her secret identity to Will and Amber. And they're like, oh yeah, the one who can duplicate. And she's like, no. And they're like, who? And she's like, the pink one. And they're like, oh. And they like don't really care. And I'm like, I, like, what is up? I don't understand, because her powers are insane.
She literally manipulates things on an atomic level. She can just create whatever she wants.
Yeah, she can literally, there is like, she can just do whatever the fuck she wants. And she can do it. And it's like the most powerful, the most creative, the most versatile. Like, her powers are insane. And I don't understand why she isn't seen by herself and by others as this like powerhouse. And I guess, I mean, it could also be a commentary on sexism, right? Like, she is coded super feminine, she has the pink outfit, she has the female symbol on her uniform. So it's like this active dismissiveness of women who deserve more because of the way that we expect them to be and the way that we perceive them because of society. But I don't know if that's the intention. Basically, I just want to see more of her. I think she's incredibly badass, and I want to see her like just do cool shit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think Eve is a very interesting character in terms of just like her upbringing clearly is not all there.
No. And I think she also could have, like, easily become sort of this, right, like, contentious character between her and Amber, where they, like, both kind of have some feelings for Mark. And it
No, but I do really like that, like, there is a bit of a love triangle brewing there, but they never...
It hasn't evolved into the two girls having animosity towards one another.
Yes, yes.
Which
yes.
I appreciate.
Like, it is very clearly, like, she acknowledges that this is not her relationship. At one of her weakest moments, she clearly goes to Mark for comfort. And it could have very easily led into a relationship, but she sees Amber and Mark together and she's just like, yeah, good for him.
Yeah, and then she helps Amber when she's struggling with her relationship with Mark.
She does everything in her power to really, like, support that relationship and try to give Amber all of the reasons that she needs to stay with him and support her, that entire relationship from start to finish.
Basically, I'm realizing that Eve is one of my favorite characters. And I am obsessed with her. I also had a really hard time when I first started the show unseeing her as Britta from Community.
Because it's the same voice actress.
Because she just started talking, and I also just finished rewatching Community like a week ago, so I was just like, oh my god, that's Britta. And I couldn't disconnect my associations with Britta with my associations of her, but it's okay, we got there, and I am obsessed with her, and I love her, and I am really excited to, basically I'm excited that the teens seem to be having a more central role moving forward, like, that's moved beyond just sort of these relationships to this core that understands what is happening and is going to be working a little bit more closely together, at least emotionally, because, like, obviously they can't, that, like, little human babies can't go out and fight because they die. But,
I mean, speaking of Gillian Jacobs, can we just talk about how stacked this voice cast is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
It's insane. I knew J.K. Simmons was Omni-Man. And, yeah. Like, already I was like, okay, we're starting off strong. Like, dang, you got the good stuff. But, like, everyone else.
Like, Jason Mantzoukas as Rexplode is an interesting casting. Also another character that is white in the comics.
Oh my god, yeah, that was amazing. He started talking too, and I was like, oh my god. Oh my god. It's him.
How many of these voice actors can we just slot right into a live-action adaptation?
Oh my goodness, this is a fantastic game.
Stephen Young, I think a little bit too old.
Yeah.
I think we gotta go a bit younger for Stephen Young. Stephen Young cannot pull off high schooler anymore.
Yeah, I'm a little done with, like, also, like, grown men playing teenagers. But, oh my god, but the actress who voices Amber, ugh! How old is she?
Daisy Beats is great.
She's amazing. Okay, I know that I literally just said that, but also she would be so good. Also, I feel like Gillian Jacobs kind of could look the part of Eve. Oh my god. And Sandra Oh would be.
I think Sandra Oh would
Debbie.
Work real good.
Oh,
but I mean, Stephen
god.
Young. I think you could get away with Daisy Beats.
J.K. Simmons, right off the bat, that would work out. Wait, who the heck does Andrew Reynolds voice?
You don't think J.K. Simmons is also a little bit too old? I guess Omni-Man does have, like, the gray in his hair.
Yeah, and if we were in a live action to age up the high school kids, it would also make sense to age up the parents, because then it would even out a little bit, you know? Although Jason... Jason Mantzoukas should not...
Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you telling me Jason Mantzoukas cannot play a high schooler?
That would be hysterical. That... Now I can't unsee that. And I... Oh my god.
I think Walton Goggins is perfect for Cecil.
Oh, yeah. Who does Andrew Reynolds voice? William Claw? Who's William Claw? Oh, Will.
Oh, Andrew Reynolds. It's Will.
Oh, my god.
It's Will.
It's Will. How did I not? It's because I didn't expect frickin' Broadway star Andrew Reynolds to be...
I recognized it immediately. I was watching it and I went...
What?
That's the... You know what got me?
What?
I was like, that's the second busker in Central Park.
Oh my god.
Because, like, that's the exact, like, tone and cadence that he uses in that role. And it's like, like, having already heard him in a role prior to this, I was like, yep, that's
Mark
him.
Mark Hamill would be, yeah, Mark Hamill would be an amazing live-action art, too.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Well.
I think this cast would be good if we kept everyone the same age. I'm a little hesitant to be like, all these people can play high schoolers, because that doesn't work out.
No.
It makes things real. I mean, no, wait, what if we age them up a bit and just put them in college?
I mean, we could do that. It has been done. Is a 40-year-old then too old to play someone in college?
I mean, Gillian Jacobs already does it.
That's true, but that was
I think that was also like a decade 10 years ago.
Yeah, which feels so weird to say because I remember watching Community like as it was airing in real time. So that's fun.
All right, but can Zachary Quinto pull off playing a full-grown robot and also a 12-year-old?
I don't know, man. I mean, if anyone can do it. But then here's the question. If he's play, would we have Jason Manzoukas play the 12-year-old? Because it is supposed to be him younger.
It's a young Jason. But it's a young Jason. We've CGI down Jason Manzoukas. But give him Zachary Quinto's voice.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a disaster. I feel like this would be a beautiful, beautiful parody. Like,
I hate it. No.
Yeah. But it would work, though. Although, yeah. I still now...
All right. But real question.
Right. Oh, no.
Can you see Seth Rogen as Alan the Alien?
Yes. 100%.
All right. Good talk.
He could do it. It's been decided.
I mean, that might actually be happening for all we know.
That's true. We have no idea who he could be playing. Or if he even is playing someone in a live action one. I don't know if he's producing it or what, but...
I mean, I believe he produced this as well.
Wait.
He's listed as one of the executive producers on IMDb.
Wait, he did this and the live action one?
Yeah.
Man, this guy just really likes Invincible, huh?
Speaking of Zachary Quinto and Jason Manzoukas' body. how did you feel about that whole relationship?
Okay, I mean, aside from the whole, like, stealing genetic material and stuff, it is probably the only relationship that I feel like Monster Girl can be in that isn't going to be incredibly creepy.
You mean it's not already incredibly creepy?
I mean, it is, but at least they're both adults. Like, at least they're both adults. And at least they are both adults in a situation where they and they alone can understand that the person that they are in a relationship with is not, in fact, a 12-year-old. Like, right? Like,
but I still take issue with the fact that he explicitly chose Rex's DNA to copy because he saw that this 12-year-old was attracted to him.
This 25-year-old was attracted to him.
Thank you. This 25-year-old was attracted to him.
I mean, that is true, but like I said...
Like, it's not just the stealing of genetic makeup. It's the explicit... It's the fact that he explicitly chose Rex.
That's true, and I also don't think that it... Like, I was, like, grappling with this... Because I had a moment where I, like, literally paused the show to talk to Larry about this. Because I was like, okay, if Beast Girl is 25, which she is, or Monster Girl, sorry, she should want to be with someone who also visually looks 25, because as a 25-year-old, having sexual interactions with someone who is not, in appearance, 25 also feels super sketchy.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
very
okay.
much so.
And then I was thinking about it, and I was like, okay, but also she understands that Rudy isn't actually 12 and is... Actually, we have no idea how old he is.
But also, in the reverse of that, if he were to be physically 25, it would be him in a 25-year-old looking ass man.
Yes, exactly.
In a relationship with a 12-year-old looking girl.
So
like,
again, I honestly think that this is like the only way that it could have worked, because you have two people who both look 12 who know that the other one is not 12 and can be attracted to them as a person that they know as an adult, but also be looked at on a societal level as okay.
But if you are in that same situation and you are, let's say you're in a situation where you only have one other individual that you are even able to find that is even romantically suitable because of the external factors that are occurring, age, whatever it may be, does that automatically make them a viable romantic candidate?
No, you're right there. But we also know that, like, Rudy does really care about Beast Girl.
Yeah, and Monster
but
Girl...
Also, is it actual... Or Monster Girl. Jesus Christ, I'm just gonna keep hecking that up. Monster Girl. Monster Girl.
But, like, at no point does Monster Girl ever look to Rudy in a romantic sense prior to him admitting all of these things.
That is also true, but I do think that she starts to, and again, like, you can't tell if it's romantic or if it's just, like, understanding that a person cares about her, but, like, when she comes out of her, like, big bad trauma hospital stay, like, she understands that Rudy, or at that point, robot truly cares for her and is the reason why she's alive. Again, you shouldn't feel like you need to be in a relationship with someone because they're the reason you're alive. Also not an okay basis to agree to be in a relationship, but like...
Yeah, I think this relationship on its surface is very cute. And the moment we start peeling away literally like the first layer, it gets worse and worse.
That is 100% fair. There's also the question of, like, why did they even need a love interest? Like, why do these side characters even have to have any type of romantic interest with one another? And, like, I do get that, like, the whole intrigue of Rudy, like, getting back into a new body was this element of mystery that was part of the show, right? Because, like, as we unpack the fact that Omni-Man isn't who we think, we get these little snippets of robot doing things that we don't understand. And we're kind of, like, through the lens of having Omni-Man so shifted in our minds, I, as an audience member, kept being like, okay, what's going on with Robot? Like, it was really heightened to understand what was going on because of the level of intensity of the shift from Omni-Man, right? Like, I was expecting a shift for Robot that was that level of crazy. So, like, in terms of the momentum of the story, it was interesting. But also, again, he could have just wanted a body because he was in excruciating pain. Like, it didn't have to be in the pursuit of anyone romantic.
Yeah, but it didn't also have to be specifically the 12-year-old body of the individual whom you are trying to romantically.
Oh, yeah. No. I 100% agree with you there. I also think it would have been really funny if he had given himself Monster Girl's body and been like, I just know you have really high self-esteem, so you love yourself. So I was like, what? Like, obviously she'll love it if I look just like her. That would have been really funny. Definitely should not have happened, but I'm glad it didn't. But anyway, that's an aside. But yeah, no, you're right. Not, I don't think it was necessary, and it's definitely not super great.
But it's also, you do see that for Robot to do this, he did have to do some pretty bad things.
Yeah.
Like he broke the Mahler twins out of prison, potentially killed people, who potentially killed people in the process of escaping.
Yeah, definitely did. Actively did.
Yeah, like...
And he did intend to bring them back to prison, but that also doesn't undo the deaths that manifested because of getting them out.
Yeah, like, Rudy very much has a ends justify the means kind of approach to a lot of things.
Yeah.
All right, what other ships can we talk about?
Okay.
Give me more ships.
Well, I mean, this isn't really a ship, but we could talk about Debbie and Nolan. It's like a sad ship.
That is a relationship that exists in this show.
Yeah, it's a sad one, but it's there.
You don't want to talk about Will and Rick?
Well, I don't know what happened to Rick, so now I'm, like, terrified.
What do you mean you don't know what happened to Rick? He got turned into a monster.
Yeah, but they don't know if they were able to turn him back. I mean, probably not.
I mean, how easy is it for you to reattach a severed arm and reestablish your neural connections, especially when the person who did this to you is now hired by the individuals who were trying to fix you?
So are you saying that he's gonna be okay, Andy? Are you setting me up to
I will neither confirm nor deny that.
Because that would be good. Also, okay, I got really mad at Mark in the scene when he and Will are in the car, and like Will is like telling him like it is, like he's like, yeah, like she should have broken up with you, it makes sense, you were being kind of a dick to her. And Mark like storms off and is like, my girlfriend just broke up with me, you don't understand. And I'm like, he literally just saw his boyfriend, romantic love interest, try to kill him and then try to kill himself, and then maybe will or will not be alive in the future. So like, that seems a little bit more grave than your breakup, Mark. But also again, high school.
But also, so Will like tells him how things are.
Yeah, and he's right.
Like, maybe you were kind of an asshole, Mark.
Yeah, maybe you were. Totally was. I was super turned off to Mark in the first couple episodes because he has these like moments where he just says really shitty things. And like, I do also think it makes sense in high school when you lash out like that. But there's a moment where he talks to his mom right before they have their heartfelt conversation when she's like, stop making holes in my backyard. And he turns to her and just goes, make me. And I was like, what a dick. But he warmed up to me, so it's okay. But
yeah. But I mean, that's also pretty high school-esque.
Yeah. That's when I started to really like Debbie, when she like turned to him and was like, does that make you feel like a big man to talk to me that way? Does that make you feel strong? And I was like, yes, mom, tell it like it is. Make that boy
Yeah, take no
stop.
Shit.
Yeah, get it.
So what do you think about the future for Mark and Eve?
You think
they ever get together?
I don't know. I mean, I think, again, like, you're totally right. The brimming of a love triangle is there, and, like, who knows what's going to happen.
There's definitely a whole lot of romantic coding between Mark and Eve.
There 100% is. And I also think that, like, they are able to spend time with one another in ways that Mark and Amber can't. And they're able to understand the weight of what they do in ways that Amber can't. But I also, again, don't think that that's necessary for a good relationship.
It helps.
It helped, and I also can't see, it is hard to see Amber want, or I guess it's just hard for me to empathize with wanting a life with somebody that you are worried will die all the time. And I, like, yes, he's invincible, sure, but he is now getting to the point where he is fighting foes that we now know can kill him, because they are him.
But we've also seen him fight foes that aren't necessarily Viltrumites, that are also capable of killing him, like Battle Beast. But yeah, does a number to him.
Yeah, and also just doing harm. So I have a hard time empathizing with wanting that, but like, also, if you love that person, then maybe it's worth it.
Yeah, but like, that's going to be an issue with Mark in any relationship he's in, so long as he does what he does.
Yeah, and it's also tough with Mark too, because, like, we've already established, as a Viltrumite, like, he is gonna age out of these relationships, and that's also an incredibly painful experience. And that's the same with friendships too, so the romance at that point doesn't really matter as much, but, like, it's just a really scary foundation for a relationship, for anyone.
Yeah.
Like, damn, I wouldn't want that.
So Mark's ability to live forever, or live much, much longer than your average human, is one of the driving factors that Nolan tries to beat into him in the final episode.
Yeah.
The last two episodes are honestly some of the strongest of the show, hands down.
Insane.
And they unpack a lot of information very quickly, and it is dense. And I remember going into this. I'd been watching the show with my roommates on a weekly basis as it was released. One of my roommates had asked me, like, knowing that I had the information from the comics, like, he's like, don't tell me any specifics, but, like, I don't see a world where anyone is able to defeat Omni-Man. In my eyes, nothing can stop Omni-Man from just conquering this. Like, what possible not Deus Ex Machina ending can they possibly assign to this story and have it make sense? And I'm like, no, it makes sense.
It does.
Because, it's true. Omni-Man is very much set up to be this unstoppable force. Nothing can physically stop him from just conquering this world outright.
Except for himself.
And I think it's very interesting because, like, at least in the comics, the reveal that he murdered the Guardians of the Globe comes much, much later than it does in the show. And when it is revealed, he just sort of slaughters them. There isn't really a fight. Like, in the show, he struggles to beat them. Like, he barely gets out of there and he collapses at the end. Where in the comics, he just sort of slaughters them. And I think, like, the comic Nolan is very different from the TV show Nolan, in that he is powered down a bit, or at least he appears to be, to some degree. And he does go out of his way to kill.
So when I was thinking about this moment where Omni-Man leaves, I was talking with Larry about it, and we were talking about, like, the impact of, I don't know if social conditioning is the right word, but, like, I mean, I guess, sure, the impact of our time. And you have a character like Nolan, who has been brought up and conditioned in this world to believe what he believes, right? To believe that the Viltrumites are this superior spate, like, beings, and that for them to take over the world is what has to be done for the world to be good, because Viltrumites are good and everyone else is bad, and weakness is bad. And that is impactful. But you also see the impact of his time on Earth in that moment where he flashes to seeing Mark as a kid and then isn't able to punch him that final time. He isn't able to deal the death blow. So that the time that he has on Viltrum has shaped who he is, but also the time on Earth has shaped who he has become. And I think that answers the question that Nolan keeps asking of, like, why do you care about this place? Why do you care about these people? Because they have impact. And you see that in Nolan. He doesn't want it to. He has every reason to not feel the way that he feels, but he isn't able to do that final thing because of whatever tiny bit of feeling he has for his son. And whatever tiny feeling he has that is separate from what he should feel as a Viltrumite. And that's, I don't know, that's like a powerful thing to have happened. It is not a redeemable moment. I don't think that this is like, wow, he has the potential to be good now. Like, I don't think that I want that to be what happens and how it plays out, because like we've talked before about animated kid shows that just kind of like forgive people who have done genocide. So like, I really don't want this show to become another one that does that.
I mean, Nolan has not yet done a genocide. He hasn't done a genocide, you know?
He's
come to this earth with the intention of it. I guess we do actually watch him commit it. Never mind. I take it back. We literally watch him take over a planet.
Yeah, and he also just kills people all the time. So like, even if he hasn't succeeded in the genocide, he has started the process of like ethnic cleansing. So like, still not okay.
That's another fairly big difference from the comic book. The comic book, Nolan sees this more as a job. He never, at least in the comic books, he never goes out of his way to murder someone. Like, you don't get a scene where Mark saves someone and then Omni-Man just comes down and kills him anyway.
Ugh, that was all just devastating.
Like, that doesn't, like, Omni-Man, if someone's running from him, he doesn't chase them down. He's not like a no witnesses, no survivors. He's just sort of doing his job. Like, he sees it like as just a casual thing. And
I think
it's very interesting that
which one I think is worse. Like, they're both so bad in different ways.
I think it's very interesting that they made this much more bloodthirsty Omni-Man.
Yeah, and I don't know, I think it makes sense with the space that we're in politically in the real world, maybe, right? Like, I don't know how to grapple with this, but we're in this space where so many people feel superior to others and are going out of their way to view the people that they are stepping on as inconsequential. So I think it kind of makes sense for this iteration of Omni-Man to be somebody who is pursuing this cause with active vigor. Because that's kind of what we're getting now in the world that we are watching.
That's fair. I do also think that it has to do with the runtime. Comic can stretch this plot point out for several issues on end, whereas this needs to be resolved within 40 to 80 minutes.
Yeah, and it definitely does add a different level of emotional impact, because it's not just something he's doing, it's something he's pursuing with active, like, vigor, and the emotions that an audience can then attack, like, I think that would elicit more of a response from me, and I think the show does a really good job of, like, getting these emotional punches, and in the context of the show, that makes sense.
But, yeah, no, I think, like I said, I think it has to do with the runtime, and, like, you really, Nolan is a villain at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the show would do as well if he wasn't acting villainously for at least some portion of these episodes.
Yeah, and I think it would also make the impact of him leaving less powerful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not doing a job, sure, that's, like, great, okay, you're not following orders, but, like, turning away from the core of your being and your philosophies is a next step.
But, so you don't believe that Omni-Man can be redeemed in any way?
I think that it's possible, but I think redemption has to be less about the shift in mindset and more about the actionable actions that are done after that shift. And I think that Omni-Man has done so much harm to these other planets that I don't think he can, like, he can't be redeemable in the context of the places that he's literally eradicated. I think there could be potential, because, again, like, thinking about the life that he has, but he's also been in the army for this long, so it's hard to, like, grapple with his potential to be redeemed as a whole and his potential to be redeemed in the eyes of Earth specifically, because I think, like, if you're thinking about him doing the work to undo the harm that he's done, that would have to be, like, active work for the rest of his life.
Oh, I do not disagree with you. I do genuinely believe that, I think, in, at least in the eyes of Earth, he can't be redeemed. Like, there's no coming back from what he did. But, like, in the eyes of his family, that's a different question.
That's true. That is different. I don't think that he can be redeemed for Debbie. I don't think that he should.
That's fair.
Like, I don't think that he can build the care for her that he would need to feel. And I don't think that he can come back and just maintain the relationship that they've had. I think that he could potentially build that with Mark because they have the time, and they also are building off of a place where, like, Nolan already cares for him at a level that is more equal to himself, right? As opposed to Debbie, where it's just, he doesn't even see them as, but again, like, should you be redeemed if you're just this bad in terms of the way that you view others? Like, again, not from the context of the world, but it potentially for Mark. And I think that for Mark too, because like the last thing he says to his dad when his dad is like literally killing him, and he's like, when all this is gone, what will you have? And he says, I'll have you, dad. And I like wanted to freaking cry, but I was so like stunned at what was happening that I didn't. I think that Mark really does need someone who's there in his life as a constant. I think that that is an incredibly human need. And I think that like, I want Mark to be able to have that. It's frustrating that he can only get that though now from his father, right?
Yeah.
We need some other like Viltrumite who went to the world and had an arc separate from Nolan, where he experienced what Nolan did, but like actively changed and grew from it, right? Like, I have such a hard time with Nolan being redeemed, even in Mark's eyes, because even if he's able to build a relationship with Mark, I think that Mark is probably the only person he's able to build a relationship with. And if he can't do it with anyone else, how do I trust he's gonna do it well with Mark? And also, if he's only able to do it with Mark because Mark is like him, that's just super messed up.
But it's also, like, you can tell that these things affected him from the start. That whole final scene where he's just screaming at Mark, it feels like he's screaming at himself. At least that's the way I interpreted it.
Interesting. I didn't think about it like that.
Like, I think it's very much like, these are the things that were instilled in him from a very young age. And, like, very young for him could have been thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
And this is him finally having a reason to not do what he is doing, and he is beating back in those ideals and virtues back into him as he is trying to convince himself that this is what he really needs to do. And at the end of the day, he's staring at this individual whom he has grown to care for and whom he cannot kill. He cannot bring himself to deal that final blow. And he knows that if he is to stay after what he has already done, he will either need to kill him or leave.
Yeah, which just goes to show the impact that care can have on an individual, right? Because this has undone, like you said, who knows how long of this indoctrination and conditioning, but it's being undone with love.
And it's definitely not something that's ever going to be undone overnight.
Oh, yeah, God, no. And I trust that this show isn't going to do that, because that would be, if they were like, wow, Omni-Man didn't deal the final blow and he left and didn't kill us, and everyone was like, wow, we should still, what a great thing. I'd be like, no, the great thing he did was not do a terrible thing, but start to do a terrible thing. Like, no, that's still really bad. But I trust that the show will like actively grapple with the weight of what he has done and the weight of what he will have to do to at least get an ounce of potential redemption. But it's big stuff, man.
Yeah.
Big stuff.
And honestly, like, the aftermath of that fight, I really empathized with Mark and Debbie and like their that entire, like, I very much empathized with the individual, with what these individuals were going through.
Yeah, I literally can't even imagine. I don't, it's so earth-shattering. Because, like, even though Mark can potentially live for however long, this has still been his entire life. And it's been almost Debbie's entire life. Like, regardless of what's in the future, the amount of weight that this moment has taken up is all of it. Like, it's their entire lives. And it's also just, like, so freaking devastating. I don't even know. I really hope that we can learn a little bit more about Debbie's support system. Because we've seen Mark. And, like, I feel like that at least gives me hope that he's gonna, like, not just suddenly be okay, but, like, he has people there for him. And for Debbie, the only person we know who is really there for her is Mark. And, like, I guess we see her with Art at the very end.
So I think it's tough for Debbie because
she can't even talk about it with anyone.
There are very few individuals in the world who know both Omni-Man and Nolan Grayson as the same person.
Exactly. And, like, most of them are in the government and kind of suck. So
she's really restricted to, like, Cecil, Art, and Mark in terms of the individuals that she can talk to about this.
Which just sucks. Like, that's because Mark is dealing with his own trauma. And like, can definitely be a support system, but is also still a young boy at the end of the day. And, but I just, like, the amount of pride that she must feel for him is also really intense, right? Like, to know that he could have been something else and has gone down the path that she would have hoped for him. Like, that's a powerful thing to feel as a mom, too.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, basically, everything sucks for them. Everything is the worst, and oh god. But like, again, I think this show does a really good job of having you understand the importance of the big picture and the little picture, right? Like, there's the impact that this moment has had on just Mark and Debbie, and there's the impact that Omni-Man has had on just Earth, and then there's like the level of the impact that Omni-Man and the Viltrumites have had on like the freaking galaxy. So like, I like that the show forces you to see everything from like a micro and macro perspective, because I think so many people get trapped into only looking at the little thing and not being able to see the larger system, and then other people get stuck only looking at the larger system and not putting the time into thinking about how changes are going to impact individual people. And the show literally forces you to think about both.
Oh yeah, and a lot of shows do not do that.
No, and
a lot of shows don't have the ability to do that.
No, and it goes back to the writing of the show. It is incredibly good, and it also shows that the priority that the creators and writers had, because everything is so intentional, and everything is so well done, and everything is crafted with so much intelligence from like the creator's ability, not just in terms of being able to tell a story, but in terms of being able to think about how to tell that story in a way that is impactful on so many different levels, and will also hopefully impact the way that people then grapple with the world around them separate from the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think seeing the aftermath of that fight, I was like genuinely in tears for like, I think like the next 10 minutes.
Wow.
Like, that really hit me hard.
Yeah.
And I think, and I honestly don't know if I'm going to be leaving this part in the episode, but I felt very similarly watching this as I did living the aftermath of the Boston bombing.
Oh, wow.
As I'm sure you're aware, there are a lot of parallels there.
Yeah.
Where someone who was close to, I was never close to Jahar specifically, but I had met him. I've had multiple conversations with him, and I knew him to at least a personal level, and I was close to people who were very close to him.
Yeah.
So, like, seeing that emotionally portrayed in a animated superhero show was not a position I was ready for.
Yeah, no, that is understandably incredibly, incredibly emotional.
This show hit me in a lot of places.
Yeah, I'm honestly really surprised that I didn't cry. I have cried at, like, the stupidest things, and this is,
This show did not make you cry at all.
No!
At no point.
No, it literally didn't, and I don't understand if it's because the emotional cues are different than what I'm used to watching. Like, this show is so different than what I am used to viewing that the things that usually tug on my, like, emotional heartstrings weren't present. I am also now wondering why I cry more at happy things than I do at, like, gut-wrenchingly devastating things. Because I cry every time I hear the She-Ra theme song, and I'm not joking when I say that.
We're warriors!
I understand it.
We must be strong!
I also will not lie to you that I have seen the entire show, and every single time the theme song comes, and I never skip it, I do tear up a little bit, and I get emotional. I don't, like, openly weep every time I hear it, but, like, my eyes water a little bit every fucking time. But then this show didn't make me cry, and it's, like, devastating! So I don't know why, but I am incredibly surprised that it didn't, especially because typically the stuff that makes me cry is, like, again, relationships between parents and their kids, but usually it's because they're heartfelt and not because they're, like, devastating. So maybe I just have a hard time crying when stuff is really freaking horrible, but I do when things are, like, happy. So that's weird.
This show made me cry twice. This show, 100%. I mean, that last episode, genuine tears. Like, I was, like, not... I was not functional for a portion of that last episode.
Yeah.
And then I think I teared up in the first episode when the love bodyguard was like, hey, look, my son's been through a lot, but, like...
Oh!
I was like, that's so cute!
Yeah, no, that... those two things definitely make sense. I'm surprised I didn't cry when the guy was being cute with his son. Like, what? Maybe it's because I was just, like, tense with the anticipation of not knowing what the
You were, like, emotionally preparing yourself for this.
Yeah, I was just
you,
like, well, I
you were, like, not expecting them to live through this scene. You're just like, yep, no, nope, can't care, no.
It's like, gotta build up the wall now, Nadia, because...
But yeah, did you think I was lying to you like right up until the end credits of that episode about the violence?
Oh no, I knew it was gonna happen. I think that I was just anticipating like it being the typical superhero show violence where like there would be fights and they'd be kind of bloody, because like there was a fight in the beginning and it wasn't a huge fight or super graphic, but like again, because I actively avoid shows that have any type of violence, I'm not used to any of it, so when it is just there, I'm like, wow, how much, like, this is so much violence. So I think that I just expected it to be like that, right, where like there were fights and the fights were depicted without the censoring that a lot of shows where you know that things would be violent if they were happening in your world, but they're like coded differently in the movie, so you just are kind of separated from it a little bit.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I just expected that this show would be a superhero show that didn't do that, but I was
so
not
like The Boys
ready. Yeah, exactly. That's because I remember I saw the trailer for The Boys when you mentioned it to me, and I watched the trailer for Invincible before I started it, and I definitely just kind of like coded them the same in my mind, and like I haven't actually
seen
The
Boys.
Well, that's the
thing. This show gets a lot of comparisons to The Boys, and I think that that's very unfounded.
Do you think they're compared just because of graphicness of the violence, or because
they're both superhero stories that are told in a much more adult manner. Like, I've heard a lot of people refer to this as it's just The Boys but animated.
Oh, that's frustrating.
And like, I get it. I understand the concept. I've definitely used phrases like that before, but it's really not that. Anyway.
No, I agree. And I get frustrated when people compare stuff on like surface level connections, right? Like, oh, they're both adults, they're both violent, they're both superhero stuff, as opposed to building connections with like the content and the meaning and the intention of work, because I think that's a much more powerful connection to build.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked a bit about what we see next for Omni-Man, but there are a number of different plot threads that are sort of left untouched. What do you, are you looking forward to any of the potential plot lines that we're looking at for a season 2 and 3?
I'm excited for all the teenagers to be on the same page being teenagers together. I know that's not like a big plot point, but I'm just really excited that they like are all finally on the same page. Like, it's just so refreshing to know that like, okay, there can be actual communication here, and I'm very excited for it. But yeah, I am excited for the teens to all be on the same page. I don't know, that's honestly the main thing that like stands out to me being excited for. And I know that there are a lot of things that were like revealed in the last episode, like with all those little creatures on Mars. That's like a thing that's still going on. And there's like the being that is, there's the like obvious incumbent battle of like Viltrum and Earth, which is a big thing. So I don't know, there's a lot of stuff. What about you? What are you excited
there's
for?
There's the battle beast, the big cat that just likes to fight a lot.
What?
He's still out there.
Oh, the little tentacle guy?
No, battle beast.
Oh, the lion.
Yeah, the big,
yes.
He's just a
okay.
Big cat.
Okay. Oh, and there's
I'm sorry, was big cat not a good enough description there?
I will be honest that I didn't watch a lot of that fight because of the gore. So.
Oh, is it because two more heads get smashed in?
Yeah, no biggie. Oh, what was I going to say? There's the whole plot line about again, they took down Machine Head, but now that other guy whose name I can't remember,
Titan,
but now like Titan is in that role, so there's the intrigue of like what is gonna happen there, which I'm kind of a little bit worried about how that's gonna pan out, but also I'm intrigued that they're at least like continuing it, because again, it's like a show where this big thing happened and it's not just gonna leave it there, right? Like, oh, the big bad was taken down and that's the end of it. Like, there is a continuation there and we are going to see it, and I'm excited that the show is gonna give it to us, even if
and
I don't know if it will really continue it and to what extent, but it's letting us know that this is still happening.
Yeah, and I think this is a very big benefit of this being a show that is adapted from a story that has already finished. The comics stopped releasing in 2018, so we have the outline, the skeleton of the show from start to finish, with everything that occurs having already been fleshed out. The comic itself does a lot of this. They definitely bring up plot lines in one issue that then don't get touched for several issues, but then get brought back. And I think that it's very clear, like, from the start, the creators of the comic and the show definitely have a strong hold on everything that's going on and all of the stories that need to be told.
Yeah, I think that also just shows the benefit, too, of how they're able to make these changes with such intention. Specifically, like, the Omni-Man stuff that you were talking about earlier, because they have the steps mapped out. They have the plot steps, they have the beats, they have these stories already written, so they can really take the time and energy to think about the intention of how those stories are told and to tell them with the impact that they want. So I think the creative energy is being put into a really... It's just being used really well, which is just exciting. Like, everyone is just doing their job and they're all doing it well, and just round of applause all around.
Yes, yes, yes. Give me good writing. That's all I want.
Yay!
You know, I'm excited for Mr. Volcano Man.
Oh my god. All right.
I love me some campy one-liners.
I also just really appreciated all the stuff that he was yelling when I was like, honestly, though, yeah.
I minored in sociology, don't worry.
Yeah, and like women and gender studies.
And yeah, women and gender studies.
I do not know if this is the change that they made from the comics, but like when I was watching it, I was like, wow, this is definitely a character that is coded so like 2021. Like, it just like, I just really loved it. But I was like, yes, they are definitely very intentionally pandering to, like, the audience that is viewing this and the views that they probably assume that we could potentially hold and are just like, hey, here's a villain who's going to say all the stuff you agree with, but, like, just be a little goofy. But yeah, I like.
But yeah, like, that, I do like that you're able to fit that in somehow. Like, this very campy superhero-ass, we're just going to throw one-liners at each other and just save the day at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, they managed to fit that in a very realistic story, and I want to see more of that.
Heck yeah. Well, I'm super excited for season 2, and I will just wait until you tell me it's here, and then I'll watch it, as I do with most things.
Do you want me to tell you as it's releasing, and then just go watch it on a weekly basis? Or would you like to binge watch it in an entire week like you did this one?
Oh, that's an excellent question, because this is a show with so much mystery. Probably weekly. I think I, like, miss watching shows weekly, and it's kind of exciting to do it. And this is one that, again, is short enough that I'll be able to stick with it every week, which will be nice.
Yeah.
Yay.
This has been our discussion on Invincible Season 1. We will absolutely be coming back for Season 2 once that has been released.
Heck yeah.
And I am looking forward to that. Next week, we will be discussing the first 2 seasons of Final Space, as the 3rd is currently airing. And I believe it is due to finish in June. I think we might actually be getting this episode. Yeah, we would be recording the weekend that it finishes.
Oh, sweet.
This is a show that I have opinions on.
Oh, boy.
Whether or not they are good or bad, I refuse to tell Nadia.
Oh, fun.
We have been Animation Meditation. You can find us at AnimedPod at Gmail and Twitter. You can find me at twitch.neoamp, NEOAMP. And with that, have a good day.
Yay. Bye.
Goodbye.